Well, Mike, thank you very much for that very nice introduction. I think it really helped provide some background and context to understanding what at least three of us are presenting, and probably the fourth as well. As Mike said, and I apologize in advance, I am going to read most of it. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay. I apologize in advance. I'm probably going to end up reading most of mine just for sake of time. As Mike said, in November of 1999, Congress passed the CREA legislation, which, among other goals, aimed to foster employment for people with disabilities by making health insurance more available and affordable. The federal legislation established a series of initiatives, including the DMIE, as he mentioned, and Congress gave the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services responsibility for overseeing the demonstration, and in 2006, CMS awarded the contract to Mathematica Policy Research to conduct a national evaluation of each of the state's programs. In addition, the states evaluated their own programs, which Gene and Tom will be presenting on. Today, I'll be presenting a summary of the findings from the national evaluation across all four states that Mike mentioned. These findings are also going to be presented in a report to Congress later this year. The primary goal of the national evaluation was to determine whether an early intervention program of medical and employment assistance implemented in diverse settings and targeted at different populations can delay or prevent the loss of employment in individuals with mental and physical impairments and then forestall or prevent their enrollment into federal disability benefit programs such as SSI or SSDI. If successful, the DMIE interventions would decrease participants' application for and use of federal disability benefits and prolong their employment relative to non-participants. To qualify for the DMIE-funded services, Congress mandated that participants had to meet three broad eligibility requirements. Qualifying applicants had to be between the ages of 18 and 64, be working at least 40 hours per month at the time of enrollment, and not be receiving or applying for federal disability benefits. The work requirement in particular created unique challenges for many of the states. States that wished to recruit from existing safety net programs had to make sure that these programs had income eligibility requirements high enough to allow for individuals who were employed. If states wished to focus on workers who were not enrolled in public health insurance coverage programs, they would have had to develop partnerships with multiple employers in the private sector, an effort that proved to be difficult for several state agencies to initiate. Four states received funding, as Mike said, under the 2004 and 2006 solicitations. They began providing services 1 to 2 years after receiving their awards and continued until the congressionally mandated end date of September 30th, 2009, a year ago. Because of differences in award dates, duration of enrollment varied across states. Duration of enrollment varied within states as well because of the rolling recruitment process. So people came in at different points in time, and that the exposure to services varied across participants within states and between states as well. Each state focused on different conditions and recruited from different populations. Hawaii focused on adults with diabetes and recruited from employer organizations who were members of the Hawaii Business Health Council. Most participants, therefore, had employer-sponsored coverage at enrollment. Kansas included a broad range of mental and physical health conditions and recruited from members of the state's high-risk insurance pool. As a result, participants had coverage at the time of enrollment, but faced high premiums and cost-sharing requirements, which acted as barriers to accessing those services. Minnesota focused on adults with severe mental illness and recruited mainly from two public health programs for adults who did not have access to or could not afford employer-sponsored coverage. Therefore, most of the enrollees in the Minnesota program were receiving Medicaid-equivalent services at enrollment. Texas focused on adults with either severe mental illness or behavioral health condition with a co-occurring physical impairment and recruited from members of Harris County safety net provider. Participants had coverage but had difficulty accessing services because of the system's capacity constraints. Intervention programs varied by state, but typically included four components. Medical coverage was equivalent to their state Medicaid benefit package, or wraparound coverage for additional services such as dental and vision care that were not fully covered under existing public, private, or employer-sponsored plans. Second, employment support services such as job coaching or vocational rehab services to help participants maintain employment and overcoming barriers to continued employment. Third, person-centered intensive case management to help participants assess their health and employment needs, establish a personal one-on-one connection with the program, and navigate the system to obtain the services across different agencies. And finally, financial subsidies for participants to help cover out-of-pocket costs for premiums, deductibles, and co-payments. The national evaluation included several distinctive methodological features which strengthened the robustness of our results. First, states were required to implement interventions using a randomized design in which a target population was first recruited and then randomly assigned into either a treatment group, which was eligible for receiving intervention services, or a control group, which received existing services. Second, the national evaluation relied on an intent to treat analysis in which we compared differences in outcomes between treatment and control group members 12 months after enrollment, regardless of the extent to which they used intervention services or were exposed to services. The intent to treat approach provides a conservative test for estimating program impacts. Third, we conducted regression-adjusted estimates accounting for baseline differences that might have occurred by chance. Fourth, we were able to increase our sample size by pooling data from two states, Minnesota and Texas, with similar participant characteristics and risk factors. Fifth, all four states collected and reported demonstration outcomes data using similar measures, which we refer to as a uniform data set. This standardized information was gathered through repeated surveys of participants, first at baseline and again at follow-up points that ranged from every 6 to 12 months, depending on the state and the year. The UDS data set allows for cross-state comparisons of baseline characteristics and program impacts. Finally, we were able to link the UDS data provided by states to federal administrative data sources, specifically SS data on applications to and participation in federal disability programs. These linked data are critical to the national evaluation because they provide accurate information on the program outcomes that were identified through the authorizing legislation. How am I doing on time?
You have about 7 minutes.
7 minutes, all right. States varied in their ability to meet their recruitment targets, which in turn limited our ability to detect meaningful differences across the states. Hawaii had limited success getting buy-in from employer groups and only enrolled 184 participants. The other states, which relied on administrative lists to identify eligible participants, had more recruitment success. Kansas recruited a total of 500 participants from the high-risk pool. Minnesota recruited 1,155 participants. Texas recruited 1,581 participants, all of whom were members of the county safety net provider's Gold Card plan. Actual enrollment figures were slightly higher than reported here, but we excluded participants whose SSNs we could not verify with the SSA data. DMI participants were quite diverse, both across and within states. Average age ranged from 39 years in Minnesota to 51 years in Kansas. In Kansas, many older participants have chronic physical impairments, which is consistent with the population enrolled in the high-risk pool. And most participants in Minnesota and Texas were unmarried and did not have the option of obtaining employer-sponsored coverage through a spouse and did not qualify for Medicare because they're younger than 65. Despite their multiple medical conditions, most participants in each state reported working at least one-fifth reported working full-time before enrolling in the demonstration. DMI participants in Hawaii and Kansas had higher rates of employment and higher personal earnings than participants in other states, and participants' average annual earnings in Minnesota and Texas were less than $18,000 a year, which was below 200% of the poverty level. 5 minutes, fine. So I'm going to shift now to going through three different variables that we looked at. The first outcome variable was the SSA application rates 1 year after enrollment. Results from the pooled two-state analysis with Minnesota and Texas supports the hypothesis that early intervention services would reduce the likelihood of applying for federal disability benefits. Specifically, we found that 4.8% of the treatment group had submitted a federal disability application 1 year after enrollment, compared with 6.9% of the control group. The 2.1 percentage point difference, or a 30% difference, was statistically significant at the 3% level. Across three of the four states, differences between treatment and control groups were in the hypothesized direction, but not statistically significant at the 5% level, possibly given smaller sample sizes. The second outcome variable we looked at was the unemployment rate, defined as the percent of participants not working in the past 6 months, 6 to 12 months after enrollment. Only a small fraction of participants in both the treatment and control groups within each state were not working 6 to 12 months after enrollment. In one state, Kansas, the difference was statistically significant at the 2% level and in the hypothesized direction. 2% of the individuals in the treatment group were not working, compared with 6.6% in the control group. One limitation of using this employment measure is that not working can be due to many different factors, including paid vacation, medical leave, or involuntary job loss. In addition, it only provides a snapshot of work in the past 28 days, which does not capture other employment activity during the year. Finally, we also looked at the number of hours worked in the past 6 to 12 months after enrollment. Most groups in most states reported working on average at least 3/4 time. Across three of the four states, differences between treatment and control groups were in the hypothesized direction, but not statistically significant at the 5% level. In one state, however, Hawaii, the difference was statistically significant, but in the direction opposite from the hypothesis. The treatment group reported working 128 hours compared with 160 hours reported by the control group. Program staff in Hawaii suggested this result could be due to some participants seeking to improve work-life balance by reducing the number of hours they were working, which may have resulted in fewer hours worked among those receiving their intervention service, which was based on life coaching. A quick summary of the findings. The national evaluation provides early evidence that the DMIE could be effective in reducing applications for disability benefits within 1 year after enrollment. DMI participants had to be employed when they began the program, and most were still employed 12 months later. And longer-term data from subsequent rounds of the survey and more recent administrative data will be needed to determine whether these results will become stronger over time. We're in the process now of incorporating an additional round of the survey data and writing a final evaluation report, which will come out next year. Some of the policy implications. As Mike has already mentioned, the DMIE is an important national initiative for working-age adults with potentially disabling conditions. It focuses on the pre-disabled population before an individual reaches the point at which he or she can no longer sustain meaningful work. It aims to help them maintain their financial independence. It builds on existing programs by paying for wraparound services. It provides a foundation for identifying individuals who may benefit from early intervention services. As the state administrators can tell you, that was not an easy task. It can be applied to distinct groups with potentially disabling conditions, such as individuals with mental illness, a group that accounts for a large portion of the increase in SSA disability caseloads. It can be applied to many different populations and many different settings. The DMIE may also prove to be, as Mike alluded to, can be a cost-effective strategy for preventing or delaying the onset of disability in the long run by reducing participation in federal disability benefits. Finally, the DMIE builds on existing health insurance programs by paying for wraparound medical services and employment supports. It is not designed to be a comprehensive insurance program in itself. Consequently, the findings of the national evaluation may be especially salient as states work to implement health insurance reforms. For qualifying individuals with an existing insurance plan, an early intervention program may address the problem of underinsurance for adults with potentially disabling conditions, while also supporting the goal of maintaining employment. Thank you very much.